during our joys and concerns time, and I got another reminder of why I need to make notes to myself. I also overlooked mentioning that I did speak with Chris Parker by phone yesterday, and she's recovering well from her knee replacement surgery. Hopes to be able to join us in the not too distant future. So Billy, let her know that we're sending her. Well, she's listening by live stream. So Chris, we're with you there. All right. Thank you for that. And that actually segues right into how I'm leading off today. For this happened as I was beginning my second year as a minister here on second Sunday of September in 1989. I was coming up that pathway over there between the office and the classroom wing and into the sanctuary, and Jeremy Parker, Chris and Billy's son, he was 8 years old at the time, and he saw me coming, and he was coming the other way, and he looked up at me, and with a note of surprise in his voice, he said, "Oh, are you going to be our minister again this year?" Well, I was kind of counting on it. Something going on here I don't know about. I didn't say that, of course. My reply was more along the lines of, "Yes, Jeremy, I am, and I'm glad you're here this year, too." It wasn't until later in the day that I figured it out. Jeremy's first year here, when his mother, Chris, became our religious education director, that was his first year here, and that was Don Rowley's last year here. The next year was the one-year interim ministry of Reverend Wayne Chattee, and then his third year here was my first. In his mind, the clear message was, you change ministers every year. That's all he'd known up to that point. So why should the 1989-90 year be any different? Well, I was here for that church year, and for the 20-plus that followed. This spring will mark 41 years since I was ordained to the ministry. 33 of those 41 spent in the UU ministry, and 24 of those with this congregation. But who's counting? This is another installment of a sermon series I've been doing this year about my journey in ministry and some lessons learned along the way. One Sunday last fall, I spoke about some of my earliest influences and experiences in the church and home setting in which I was raised as an evangelical Baptist. Last Sunday, and then on Martin Luther King Sunday 2 weeks ago, I recalled my college and seminary days during the late 60s and early 70s and how that shaped my worldview, my theology, my understanding of ministry. So today I'm going to focus on my time here and how these years, have informed my journey. And I know we've been hitting this transitions theme pretty hard this month, for all the right reasons, I should add. We had Reverend Keith Crone here from the UUA's Ministerial Transitions Office 3 weeks ago. 1 week ago Saturday, we had what I felt was a very good, productive transitions dinner, congregational conversations. Two of my sermons this month, as just noted, touched on the topic, and I know this transitions matter will be one of the topics, one of the things we'll be talking about in our pledge drive that kicks off in 2 weeks. After this Sunday, though, I think I'm going to resume doing sermons on some of my usual subjects, as it were. Give the journey on ministry thing a rest for a while. There's only so much I can handle, and probably only so much you want to hear of me talking about myself. But looking back to the period I just referenced, it was a different era as the 1980s wound down. I did my pre-candidating interview here as the 1988 New Hampshire primary was in full swing, with the leading contenders being the eventual nominees, Vice President George H.W. Bush and Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis. Our son was 4 years old, so it was of interest to Michelle and me to learn that the church had a preschool and a kindergarten. There was no internet, or if there was, it hadn't quite made it into this with us yet. There was no internet. The word cyberspace was basically unknown. Sometime in the early 1990s, when people would be giving me their contact information, they would say, "Let me give you my email address too." So as to not appear completely clueless, I didn't ask what an email address was. And right around that same time, we had a summer board meeting, and a board member named Ken Miller, who has long since moved away, showed up with a laptop computer, said he was working on a website for the church. I don't think I was the only one at that meeting who was silently wondering, what is a website? First 2 to 3 years here, at least, I wrote my sermons in longhand on 8.5 by 14 legal pads, and I could read them without glasses. On a global level, the Soviet Union was still the Soviet Union. 9/11 was over a decade away. Iraq and Afghanistan were countries somewhere over in the Middle East that most Americans weren't paying a whole lot of attention to. These are just a few, very few, of the points that were on the social and political and cultural landscape that formed some of the backdrop as my ministry here got underway. For all that was on that backdrop, however, the lessons I learned about meanings of ministry in a liberal UU church, particularly a long-term one, as this has been, are pretty basic. I imagine they would have been learned by any minister coming into a setting like this one in almost any era. And I can frame these lessons up best by telling a story of a sermon I was very fortunate to hear after about, I think, my third, maybe fourth year here. Like many of the stories I tell, though, you got to listen to the backstory first. I hit a few bumps in the road my first few years here. My two previous UU congregations I served, each one for about 5 years, had between 100 and 150 members. And so I wasn't quite altogether geared up at first for offering the kind of institutional leadership a congregation of this size calls for. I didn't quite fully grasp what a steep learning curve I was on when it came to being the minister of a congregation with a couple hundred more members than the ones I had been used to previously in the campus ministry chaplaincies I'd served before that. And then there was my predecessor, who, as I got to know him, was one of the finer persons and colleagues I've had the privilege of knowing at my time in the ministry. Reverend Don Rowley had been here for 29 years prior to my arrival, with a one-year interim in between. My style of ministry, my theology to some extent, differed from his. We were alike in many ways, but not quite the same. I took some time getting used to, and I wasn't completely sure for a time I had gotten used to. And not to minimize it, I think some very good things certainly happened in the first 3 to 4 years that I was here. But I also found myself wondering at times if this was really the right place for me, or if the congregation might be better served by someone else. Well, that's the end of the backstory. Well, one Sunday morning, I think it was the summer of 1992, I went to the morning service at Boston's King's Chapel. I had a ticket for a Red Sox game that afternoon. I figured I'd hit two sacred spots in one day. King's Chapel and Fenway Park. King's Chapel is a Unitarian Universalist church with a very liturgical style of worship, for any of you who've been there. One reason I went there was to witness a very different style of UU worship than the kind that I lead here. And what I got was a very unexpected gift by way of the sermon for that day, which was delivered by a visiting minister whose name has long escaped me. He built it around the topic of what he called the four tenets that were needed for living a full and meaningful life. Four tenets, as he put them out there, are show up, tell the truth, do what you do with intensity, and don't get attached to outcomes. Not only can I not remember the name of the minister on that Sunday, I don't remember where he went with those four precepts either, because he put them out there right at the beginning of the service, and I kind of sat there and jotted them down and started thinking about how that might apply to me. Didn't hear a single word of what he said after that. That was a pretty telling message right there about how your sermons sometimes get received. Now, I don't remember where he went with it. I just remember those four things. In fact, they impressed me so much that I'd say that I wrote them down, came up here. I printed them off on a vintage 1992 computer and printer, and I put them on a shelf in my office where they have been to this day. Get this right side up here. Right here they are. I've sat in my office now. We'll see if that stands up there. That's sat in my office for the past 20 years. Just as reminders, it has been my touchstone. And these four tenets, as I've come to understand them, are what ministry is about. And since ministry in our tradition includes both the minister and the congregation, I think we can take a trip around these four bases together. First one, show up. Woody Allen once said, as many of you know that quote, 90% of life is showing up. I'd say the number is pretty much the same for ministry. Some of you like to joke when you see me helping out with a routine task here after an event, like stacking chairs or something. You'll say, "Is this in your job description?" Well, maybe. One thing I've learned about ministry, both here and in other locales, is that a good piece of your job description is to show up and do what needs to be done. By that, I don't mean that you are supposed to perform every single task or take on responsibility for every single thing that has to be attended to in the life of a congregation. That's a surefire recipe for a quick and surefire burnout. Showing up means maintaining a presence, making your availability known, being where you need to be when you need to be there. Of course, any minister needs to stake out his or her private space, and a congregation needs to respect that, as you have done with me, and which I have long, long appreciated. Show up then really means just letting folks know you're there for them, however much or little your actual physical presence may be called for. All right, number two, tell the truth. This is a tricky one for you ministers, particularly as I've learned it here. In a more orthodox setting, the role of the minister or the religious leader of whatever title is to proclaim the truth as binding on all within his or her congregation or religious body. Well, I think you know it doesn't quite work that way in a liberal religious setting. For you minister, tell the truth means speak your own truth and do so in a way that will encourage and challenge those who hear you to seek their own truths as well, whether it directly corresponds with yours or not. This was more of a tough nut for me at the beginning of my ministry here than I expected. My stance as a religious humanist was pretty much in place when I arrived here. Take a little side trip for a minute. By that term, I mean that human beings, for better or for worse, determine human destiny in the absence of a supernatural supreme being. The religious part means that the various religions of the world, though, do have much to teach us about how to be good, responsible, whole, life-loving, and justice-seeking human beings, whatever the theology behind those religions might be. I also feel that I'm a part of a reality greater than myself. I am part of some larger presence in the universe greater than myself, although I don't feel the need very often to call that God. And I feel that the spiritual quest is to seek a connection, both with our earth, with those around us, and with that greater reality. And that can be done through a variety of spiritual practices. Well, in a very tight nutshell, that was what I had come to at that point in my life, and that's pretty much where I've stayed, with some variations here and there, over the past 20-some years. That was and is my truth. Well, among the things I first encountered here, for lack of a better terminology, was kind of an unwritten but still real code as to what kind of language and expression was acceptable in a service and what was not. And I was a humanist myself, but I did not want to keep up what I might call a humanist orthodoxy. My goal was to express my truth along the lines I just indicated, but also to create a safe and accepting atmosphere, both in our worship environment and in various other aspects of our congregational life, where others could also speak and live their truths and have them honored and respected and celebrated. And I've learned, to my joy, it's possible to do that. It's possible to move the culture of a congregation and still maintain a cohesive core. I've also learned that a minister can't do that alone. I've enjoyed and been blessed in working with so many of you to make this an inclusive and accepting congregation. There will always, always be more to accomplish in this area. There's always more of a road to travel on that one. But I'm pleased with where we've come. I feel good about where you will go from here as you continue to be a welcoming and affirming liberal religious community. One of the very joys of my ministry was our going through the welcoming congregation process about 10, 12 years ago now. We took moves to be especially welcoming and opening to gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered persons. But I think we took that theme and expanded it out into other areas as well, and I hope that you will continue on that path. All right, third tenet. Do what you do with intensity. This was pretty simple. Simple to state anyway, but challenging to do. It really means to show that you care, that you have a certain passion for whatever it is you're doing. I've come to see this as the basic role of leadership in a free religious congregation for ministers and lay leaders alike. Do what you do with intensity. Passionate commitment, as I've learned, is infectious. If one or a few people catch fire with an idea, it can often spread. It's how our Simple Gifts Coffee House got going. A couple people came to me after service early 90s and said, how about we start a coffee house here? And I said, okay, give it a try. And we've gone where we've gone from there. As a corollary to this third tenet, I've learned that sometimes the best leadership a leader can offer is that when someone comes along with a good and productive idea and has a certain intensity about it and a certain energy around it, sometimes the best thing you can do is get out of their way. You may well have to guide and direct and help channel that energy at times. That's yet another role of the minister or lay leader. But don't step on the intensity. I'm reminded here of a line by one of my colleagues who told a gathering of other ministers about when he was getting a covenant group program going in his church, similar to the one that we've had here. He said he wasn't all that sold on the idea at first, but then he realized that there was a lot of energy and passion in his congregation for just such a program. As he put it, my leadership skills are such that I know when to get in front of a moving parade. And sometimes ministry means just that, getting in front of a moving parade and helping to guide it along, even if you didn't start the parade yourself. And then the fourth one, don't get attached to outcomes. This can be easily misunderstood, and in some ways it's the most important of the four. It doesn't mean that you don't care about the outcome of anything you undertake that's of importance to you. Don't get attached to outcomes is really about being aware of what you control and what you don't. To put it another way, in any endeavor you undertake and that you feel is worth your time, energy, and passion in pursuing, if you can tell yourself, I showed up, I told the truth, I did what I did with intensity, then you are positioned to let the outcome be what it is. Another way to put it is, don't allow your personal sense of who you are to be destroyed or diminished if the outcome you want doesn't happen, even when you've given it your best shot. If you showed up and told the truth and did what you did with conviction and passion, then you've accomplished the things you can control. And the outcome will be the outcome. And this was the stance, this was the attitude I knew I would have to bring to my ministry here the following fall after hearing that sermon. I couldn't tell you who won the Red Sox game. Couldn't even tell you who they played. But that sermon stayed with me. And I had to tell myself that if I can honestly say over the course of this upcoming church year that I have done as best I can with tenets 1, 2, and 3, then the outcome will be what it is. And, as it's turned out, the outcome is we are here today, sharing in these concluding months of what has been a very wonderful shared ministry. Well, all right. I offer all this not just for the sake of telling a story. For this story has much more of a future to it than it does a past, even though I'm describing events from about 20 years ago. In a couple of years, and they'll go by quicker than you know, you're going to call another minister once your interim period is completed. And that minister, that man or that woman, is going to need their time to claim this ministry as their own, just as I did. He or she will also need, as I did, a period of adjustment. My wish for you, for whoever your next settled minister is, that period of adjustment will be accomplished as mine was too, in an open, caring, and loving way. So that 20 years from now, another good ministry on the part of minister and congregation alike will be recalled and remembered and celebrated. Got a couple images to leave with you that help sum up what I've learned to say about ministry in the course of my time here, as well as with the other two you congregations I served before coming here. There are a couple of comic strips, actually. First one's Hagar the Horrible. Strip I got in mind is just one panel. Hagar is standing at the front of his Viking boat, and he's got his oarsmen down on either side of him that he's looking at. And each of the rowers is holding his oar waving his oar in a slightly different direction from all the other fellow oarsmen there. And a frustrated Hagar is yelling, "Will you stop saying different strokes for different folks?" For all the wise words that have been written or spoken about the meaning of ministry in a liberal church, I'd say that cartoon panel captures it pretty well. To be the minister of a UU congregation is to honor and respect each member's right to his or her oar, while also, for the sake of the overall health and strength and well-being of the congregation, needing them to all pull in the same direction at times. The liberal ministry is about honoring and celebrating each member's gifts, each member's uniqueness, each member's life stance, each member's journey, while also holding up a vision that goes beyond just different strokes. The other comic strip image, which I know I've used before, is from the now defunct strip called Shoe. In this one, one of the characters says to the other, "I've been thinking about it for a long time now, and I've decided it's hard to be an individual all by yourself." That, I would submit, is why we have UU congregations. We affirm an individual's right to their own search for meaning and purpose and spiritual depth in their lives, while also knowing that it's hard to be an individual all by yourselves. One of the joys of ministry for me, especially with this church, has been seeing individual lives transformed and taken to new levels of meaning, because we have offered a community for those who have found that it's hard to be an individual all by oneself. We honor individuals while also affirming those common values and those common principles that advance the common good, both for the congregation and for the world we seek to serve. And so I have every confidence in the path that's before you come this summer and beyond. And I hope you will keep the words of our closing hymn in mind as you take up that path. It's hymn number 1. Let's sing that together.